The views expressed on the following show may not be those of the hosts, guests, or WSPN Skidmore Radio. Talk Saratoga is produced by Saratoga Broadcasting Incorporated and may not be reproduced in part or in whole unless expressed written approval is given. Now, here are the hosts of Talk Saratoga, Rick Thompson and a Saratoga All-Star.
Good morning and welcome to Talk Saratoga. And after last Saturday's snow and ice part, I'm sorry I missed the show, but we're here today in below zero weather, so you got to give some credit to us for that. And it is very cold out, so if you go out this morning, you know, take your precautions. And today's the day after Valentine's Day, so I hope everybody had a great day with their partner. And as we get older, we tend not to celebrate as much and staying and having a nice dinner. So I'm at that point now. Yesterday I just started at it. We got a great show today, and I want to welcome our guest, Dr. Manuel Ostrich. And morning, doctor.
Good morning.
How you doing today?
Yeah,
too bad we weren't in one of the Nordic countries. They go out and take a hot bath there in the snow, you know. For those of you who don't know Dr. Ostrich, he's a local psychiatrist. And we always like to start our show, doctor, with just a little bit of background on our guests. Can you give us a little bit?
Yeah, so first, when I'm out of the office, I'm
Manuel, okay.
So I've been in full-time private practice here in Saratoga now for probably 15 or 16 years, and I've been practicing psychiatry for well over 20 years. And about 12 years ago, I had been incredibly busy. I had successful, booming private practice, working 12 hours a day, 5 or 6 days a week. And I reached a point in my life when I had gotten just extraordinarily burnt out. I was exhausted all the time. I was no longer enjoying my work. And I came to a point where I literally told myself that something had to change. And it was one day back in September 2008, my twin sister Magdalena had just passed away after having brain cancer that she had struggled with and fought against for 3 years. And she had really been a source of inspiration because she handled the adversity with such grace and humor. And after she had passed away, I just felt terrible that I had my life in front of me and I was feeling so horrible. So I literally made a commitment at that point. I drew a line in the sand and I said, something has got to change. And the first thing that I'm doing, I'm making a commitment that no matter what, you know, just with what Magdalena showed me, I was going to start to enjoy the ride. And over the last 12 years, I've just been working on multiple projects that have been really, really exciting for me. And this is the first time that I literally get to go out into the world and talk about it. And I'm so excited.
That's great.
Thanks for having me. Yeah.
Just to backtrack a little bit, I just want to know if there's a correlation between your psychiatry and the new venture. But, you know, we talked a little bit the other day about how you got in the field of psychiatry. And I said, what's fascinating to me is that that seems to be one of the hardest paths in medicine, because you're dealing with the brain and trying to figure out, you know, what's wrong. And how did you get into psychiatry? Why did you choose that avenue?
Yeah, so it was an interesting journey. The to become a doctor, and a psychiatrist is a doctor, first a physician. You just basically have to do a lot of hard work. So in high school and college, I was preparing myself to go into medicine. And at that point, I really was not very intentional in terms of making a career choice. I was good at math, and I was good at science, and I was getting good grades. In my family, the culture was that you wanted to pick a profession so that you could do something and be an independent, functioning human being and support your own family. So it was very natural that I was drawn into going into medicine. So after, you know, working hard and getting into med school, you go through various rotations, subspecialties in your third and fourth year of medical school. So you go through pediatrics and OBGYN and surgery and so on and so forth. And there's this psychiatric rotation as well. And as you're finishing your fourth year, you start to make a decision as to what specialty you're going to be applying for. And I had liked most of my rotations, and I was thinking of going into family practice. But I was procrastinating in putting in my applications. And in a rare moment back then of introspection, I'm like, you know, what are you doing? You got to put in your application. And what I came to realize is that what I had enjoyed the most was my psychiatric rotation. And there were a couple of other factors besides that. So one of the things that I really enjoyed when I was working with patients as a medical student was having the time to sit down and listen to them tell me about their lives. So there would be people who had been admitted to the hospital who were there because they were sick or for an operation. And I would just sit with them and hear about their childhood and what they were like and what growing up was like for them. And that was so much fun, and people got so much out of that. And in my family practice rotation that I did, it seemed that every single person that came in to see their family doctor would say something along the lines of, I'm here because I have a headache and I'm all stressed out. And I'm here because my stomach hurts and I'm all stressed out. Like, all stressed out was included in every single what we call a chief complaint. And it seemed like everybody was leaving with a prescription for Prozac after a five-minute visit with a family doctor. So given that I had really liked psychiatry and that I enjoyed being with people and everybody was getting Prozac anyway, I decided that psychiatry would be the direction that I would head in. The big shift in my thinking went from being a doctor that performs life-saving procedures, right, thumping on chest and saving people when their heart stops or with surgery, and really that, you know, I was interested in their emotions and how they were doing and what was going on with them.
No, you didn't buy any stock into Prozac, did you?
No.
That, you know what? I mean, it is a specialty that you do. And I you know, it's one of the, I feel, more important ones, because I think that kind of led you after you had, you know, you were feeling burned out, stressed out, and went into a new venture. I mean, that's how you felt, correct?
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting. When I was finishing my residency in psychiatry, I was rotating. So this, for psychiatry, you do 4 years of residency after you've graduated from med school to become a psychiatrist. And my last year in residency, I was doing a rotation with a psychiatrist who had recently graduated from my program, and I asked him why he was doing what he was doing. He was a psychiatrist at the state hospital in one of the state hospitals in Virginia, and he said that he wanted to get experience working with the most difficult patients so that he could be a good psychiatrist. And I said, well, that sounds interesting. Maybe I should do something similar, come up with a plan for my career. And what I decided, just sort of haphazardly, was I'm going to do inpatient psychiatry and get really good at dealing with patients that are the most challenging to deal with. Then I'm going to do outpatient psychiatry, and I'm going to get good at that. And then I'm going to do something else. And that something else was never really well-defined until recently.
Now, I had said, I had said that psychiatry dealt with the brain and its functions, but it's also biological, too. I mean, the human body has so many components that I think that you have to deal with and get down to it. That's what amazes me the most about your field, is that, like you said, you know, you can take a person's pulse and do a life-saving procedure on them. But I think you do a life-saving procedure in your psychiatry practice because, let's face it, there's people with, multiple problems, and there's many of them. So really, when people think of a psychiatrist, they really don't think that you're a medical doctor, too.
Right. And, you know, the I'm pretty hard on myself and want to do the best that I can for my patients. So a lot of times, you know, my focus becomes, you know, the people that I have had a hard time helping, that haven't improved. But there's, over the years, lots of folks that have gotten better, and they come up to me afterwards. I remember some years ago I was out shopping, and one of the managers at a store came up to me and said, you know, are you Dr. Ashtook? And I've treated so many people, it's hard to remember anybody.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, yeah. And he says, you know, I was hospitalized some years ago. You probably don't remember me, but you literally saved my life. And he pulled some of the sales associates aside, and he says, you know, take care, Dr. Ashtook.
Well, we talked about this, and it'll lead us into the path that you're taking now. But we had talked about the two different hats that you wear, and one is in your psychiatric program or your business practice, and you really can't get too personal or release a lot of personal feelings. I mean, you have to sit there, get information from your patient, and evaluate in your mind what the possible problems are and, you know, how to treat them. So really, you can't divulge yourself a lot of your personal feelings to your patient because they're giving you their feelings. But in the path that you've chosen, you can put that other hat on and you can be more forthcoming and more get more personal with your audience and group. So do you want to veer off into that new path now, or do you want to?
No, sure. That's great. So when I do my coaching programs, I will almost always start with a public service announcement that I'm taking off my psychiatric hat and that I am putting on my coaching hat. And I want to draw a sharp line between my medical practice and my medical license and what I do with coaching.
Okay.
In psychiatry, the standard of care and the professional ethics are that the focus is 100% on the patient, and self-revealing information can cause problems in the therapeutic relationship, and it's not done.
Right.
And when I put on my coaching hat, you know, one of the things that is possible is for me to talk about things that I have gone through, because it takes me off what's potentially a pedestal for people. Because if I'm not talking at all about myself and people see me, you know, dressed okay and smiling and helping them with their problems, you know, people's sense is that, you know, I have not had struggles, right? And we tend to make those assumptions with our heroes, and we don't see that the heroes also have wounds, and that those wounds really are part of what can help us to connect with people. So when I put on my coaching hat, I'm able to talk a lot more about struggles that I've been through and parts of my life that in my psychiatric practice, it's 100% off limits, because it's just not right to do that.
Not to do, right.
So So, for instance, talking about burnout, talking about building a coaching practice, talking about other struggles that I've had in other parts of my life, that's not something that I would be doing in psychiatry. In coaching, it helps people to aspire to something because if, you know, I'm human and I've overcome obstacles, multiple obstacles of all sorts, you know, it helps them to be inspired to make changes in their lives. And,
exactly.
And that's ultimately, you know, the reason that after 12 years I'm doing this.
Well, excuse me, you, I think, as you said, people can relate easier to someone that says that I've been there, I've struggled, and you and have gotten over that, and you can too. And I think you get an awareness of bonding with somebody like that. Our phone number here in the studio, if you'd like to call, and you're listening to WSPN 91.1 Skidmore Radio, the phone number is 518-580-5783. That's 580-5783 if you'd like to call in and say hello to the doctor or have a question that you can ask. Let's transition a little bit because we can always backtrack.
Yeah.
When you started your morning musings, and by the way, did you take your cold shower this morning?
That's so funny. Yeah, so it was -8 degrees outside, and I've been taking a cold shower every morning for over 4 years. The streak was actually broken on Tuesday. Like, for the first time, I was at a hotel. And it was the weirdest thing. The hotel did not have cold water in the shower. The sink next to it had cold water.
The shower did not have.
So my streak was broken after well over 4 years of cold showers every single morning, but it was not my fault.
Now, I have to ask you a question now, because I get up at 4:15 in the morning, and I leave for work a little after 5. Now, would a cold shower help me be more alert and aware and than a warm shower?
Yeah, so I don't know. The reason I started doing the cold showers is that I listen to a lot of podcasts. Mm-hmm. And one of the podcasts that I listen to pretty regularly is who I call my friend, Tim Ferriss. He's almost like my friend because I listen to him all the time. And back in 2015, I think it was, he had a guest on. The guy's name was Wim, W-I-M, Hoff, H-O-F-F. Hmm. And he's called the Iceman because he's broken all sorts of records for exposure to cold.
Oh, okay.
And he talks about the benefits of exposure to cold and cold showers. And, you know, he talks about all sorts of medical benefits, which I am not an expert on. But what struck me was this guy was just infectiously happy. He was the happiest person I've heard this like talking. It just came across the interview so much. So I said, maybe there's something to taking a cold shower and happiness. So he was selling a course, and I've invested in a lot of courses over the last 12 years. And the course was how to take cold showers, and I took the course. The secret's pretty. You just start gradually, you know.
Like once a month, then go to twice a month.
Gradually is you start off with your normal warm shower and you do like a 10-second blast of cold at the end.
Okay.
And then you gradually do, you know, 10 seconds of cold in the beginning, 10 minutes at the end, and then you just kind of do more and more cold until there's no warm or hot. And what it does for me is it really has me challenge myself to do something I don't want to do. Like, there's not been a morning in 5 years that I look at that shower and, like, I can't wait to take a cold shower. And, like, today I knew that it was going to be, like, freezing. I'm taking a cold shower and then walking outside into -8 degree weather. But it's, you know, the shower's on, time to go.
And you're happy.
And I feel good.
Yeah,
feel
well, good. That's great. Maybe there's something to it. We just learned something new here about showers. Yeah. So let's do the morning musings and how you started with that and how you felt. And because that was an obstacle for you.
So over the 12 years, after I had really had a hard time with the burnout and made a decision to enjoy things more, I started to implement some changes, and the changes, you know, first were pretty straightforward. It was I had to get my energy back. So I started eating better. I started working out. I started to envision a future that was different than the future that I didn't seem to have. When I was burnt out, it was every day was going to look like the day before and the day going forward, and there was never going to be a change. And part of the vision that I started to develop was that I wanted to have a bigger impact on the world, which would mean doing something a little different than my psychiatric practice. And I didn't know what that was exactly going to be looking like. And over the 12 years, and Morning Musings started on my sister's and my birthday, April 18th, 2017. I had been learning a lot and taking a lot of courses, and it was very clear to me that I needed to start to produce some content, put something of my own thoughts into the world. And that was terrifying, quite frankly. So I had all sorts of thoughts in my head as to why that was not a good idea. People were going to laugh at me. My profession was going to say, you know, what are you doing, dude? You're a psychiatrist. What are you talking about, you know, leadership and happiness for? So there was a lot of, you know, head trash in my that was keeping me from moving forward with actually, you know, doing something. And a couple of things lined up. As I was realizing I needed to produce content and make my thoughts more visible and take that to the world. One thing that lined up was Brené Brown, who's a social work PhD who does a lot of work on shame and vulnerability. She had come out with a book called Daring Greatly. In the first part of the book, she has a quote from Theodore Roosevelt, which was given in 1910, which is the Man in the Arena speech. And I read that speech, and it literally gave me chills. I'll recite it if I can remember it. The speech goes, "It is not the critic that counts. It is not the man who points out how the great man stumbles or where the doer of deeds could have done things better. The credit belongs to the man who is actually in the arena, whose face is marred by blood and sweat and dust, who strives valiantly, who errs, who comes up short again and again and again, because there can be no effort without error and shortcoming. But who does actually strive to do the deeds, who knows the great enthusiasms and the great devotions, who at the best, if he succeeds, knows the triumph of high achievement, and at the worst, if he fails, fails while daring greatly." So that gives me chills every time I read that, see that, say that. It really put into focus for me that I needed to be in the arena and focusing on my contribution instead of what other people, the critics, pointing out, you know, how I'm messing things up. That it was up to me to put myself in the arena. Another thing that lined up was that back in 2017, I was hearing so many people focusing on how the world was you know, kind of going downhill. And everybody was pointing to the areas where, you know, there were problems and struggles in the world, and folks were feeling very powerless, very helpless, and they were really looking around and not taking action on in their lives. They were being stopped by all the problems that were going on around them that they had zero ability to influence. The third thing was there was a gentleman, his name is Peter Diamandis, who was the founder of the XPRIZE, and I heard him talk a couple of times, but he talked about exponential change. And how that affected my thinking was exponential change is the power of helping two people And if those two people help two people, you've got four people who have been helped. And if those help, you keep doubling, 8, 16, 32, and that's exponential. And our brains don't grasp exponential change very well. So Peter Diamandis says, if you take 30 steps out your door, your brain can pretty accurately figure out about where you're going to end up. But if you take 30 exponential steps, so one step, then 2, then 4, then 8, then 16, then 32. If you do 30 of those, it's mind-boggling how those doublings end up. So instead of 30 yards downfield, if you do the exponential, you go around the globe 28 times.
Hmm. Well, I did. my wife told me when I take my walks, I should do it exponentially, and I did the first one. I had to call her up and get a ride home. I was so far away. But no, people really don't think right. like that. And but the Theodore Roosevelt quote, I think shows me, because it just resonated with me just as you were saying it, that we're human and we're bound to fail.
Yeah.
But if we learn from our failures, that's we're on our way to becoming able to understand,
right.
I think. Because as you said, with your morning musings, you had that fear that you had to overcome.
Yeah. So those three things really got me to the point where I started every morning on Facebook before I start work. So at 6:55 or so, I'll do a 2 or 3 minute little talk just on something that has come to mind. Sometimes there's a theme for the week, a theme for the month. It all started with the desire to really talk about success and leadership and happiness. And over the years, it has helped me to clarify my thinking on things. And it's been a blast. I didn't know that I could keep it up this long, and just there's themes that develop, and my thinking gets more clear on certain aspects of what I talk about. But that first one, there was no one watching. I pointed the phone at me, and I was going live, and I knew no one was watching, and at some point somebody might. But I literally put my phone down 2 or 3 times before I gathered the courage to talk into my phone.
Which is harder than talking into a microphone, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah. And then, for months afterwards, my brain couldn't think as I was trying to talk. So the natural, you know, conversation that we're having right now, where there's something that I want to get out of my head and you know, talk to you about, I couldn't do that. It's like, you know, how do you go from what you're trying to say to and just the fact that there's a camera pointing at you.
That's
makes it incredibly unnatural. One of the early morning musings, I remember Facebook does a retrospective. Sometimes they'll pump something. Here's a memory from 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I was looking at this early morning musings, and I'm staring at the phone, the camera, saying, what am I supposed to do with my hands?
Well, you could always say, hey, I'm Italian, so I have to use my hands.
Yeah.
But, you know, and I do have to tell you this. I have done I do podcasting, and I have done some podcasts with people, and I always talk about morning musings. And one person said to me, there are several that watch those every morning, and one person said to me, give me the Facebook site, because I'd love to start my day out with inspiration, you know. And I said, well, they're not long, so you can do it in the morning and then build your day and an outlook. So you do affect people with your morning musings, which is another avenue for you to affect people's thinking.
No, yeah, so that's great. It's sometimes hard to know who's listening and who's not.
Mm-hmm.
But if I help one person, right, that's a win.
Yeah,
that's
it
a
is.
Win. And it's helped me to really get more comfortable speaking. It's helped me to clarify, you know, my thoughts on things. And it's definitely gotten me more comfortable talking into a camera.
And now you're a pro. Now, let's talk about Morning Musings. Did that kind of gravitate you over to your other hat?
Yeah, so Morning Musing was the first time that I was speaking out in public, and there was a couple of little changes over time. So my first set of Morning Musings were all done on my, you know, personal Manuel Astruc Facebook page. When I felt a little more comfortable, I had a Manuel Astruc MD Facebook page that I did Morning Musings on. And then when I got more committed to building a coaching practice, I started a Manuel Astruc Media Publishing, which has just turned into Manuel Astruc Coaching Facebook page. Over the you know, almost 3 years now that I've been doing the musings, I was getting more clear on the vision of the coaching program that I wanted to develop. And we launched it about a year and a half ago. It was an internal launch that I made available to my patients at the practice. And the way that I had presented it to folks was that people who had a vision of a life that they wanted that they were always too busy to reach or would forget about and not act on, that for people who had a vision of where they wanted to be, I would be the coach that would help them to get to where they were stuck.
And there's no age limit on that, correct?
There's no age limit, right. So occasionally I'll hear from people, but, you know, I'm 50 or I'm 60 or I'm 70, you know, I'm too old to change. Part of the beauty, I think, of life, and one of the things that I believe strongly, is that we are never, ever finished products, and that learning and growing is something that contributes to our happiness. Mm-hmm. So the coaching practice was launched as Your Next Act, and Your Next Act is, on the one hand, a long-term view. We're never finished projects. We're on a journey. And the big next act is defining for yourself what your vision is for an ideal life in 10, 15, 20 years. But looking down the road and really having some time to define for yourself what you want. And that can be a really hard thing for people. So many people have heard the suggestion that they do that. Think about it. Write it down. Probably 80% of folks think it's a good idea and never take the time to write that down. So one suggestion I would make for anybody who's listening is take some time, think about your life 10 or 15 years down the road, write a story about what you want your life to look like. Who are you hanging out with? Where are you living? What kind of things are you doing? But really take the time to do that.
We have to self-reflect a little bit.
Yeah.
And where you want to go.
Yeah.
You know, knowing you and going to your website, you offer so much on the website, which is...
So it's Manuel Astruc, M-A-N-U-E-L. astruc.com.
And anybody that goes there, I mean, and reads the information that you have on there and the descriptions of things, I don't think can not feel like they want to get something out of your next act.
Yeah.
And so you can expound on...
Yeah, so one of the interesting things, so this coaching program and coaching in general, people will ask me, you know, what's the difference between coaching and therapy? What's the difference? And there's a woman, her name is Carol Kaufman, who's the head of the coaching for Harvard. So Harvard has a coaching program that they offer for professionals to get licensed, not licensed, to get into the coaching profession. Mm-hmm. She says that therapy follows the trail of tears to find your pain and to help you with your pain. And coaching is about following the trail of dreams to help you to achieve your dreams. So your next act starts with that vision of what your dreams are. The next act is, you know, what are you doing today? What are the actions that you're doing today that are moving you day by day closer to that desired outcome? And we also will do a 90-day goal, so quarterly goals that keep us on track towards the longer-term vision of where people want to be. The heart of the program that I've developed, and I thought a long time for how to put something like this out. There's so many coaches out there and so many people with self-improvement programs that are from lots of different places. What I wanted was something that I believed strongly would help someone. I didn't just want to throw something together and wing it. So there was years of thinking about how to put something together in a way that would be useful. And at the heart of your next act is an engine that if we follow it and we turn it on, will help people to get to where they're going. The first step, so I'll describe a little bit of it, but the very first step, I go back to my medical roots and having talked to lots of people, including my brother Raphael, who may very well be listening right now. It's like, what would be something that we would, you know, help people with that would immediately help them to change their lives? And the answer was, you know, they've got to work out. They've got to move more. So the first series of things we focus on with your next act is increasing your energy. And increasing your energy is a relatively simple thing to do, but it's hard to implement, right? So what we're fighting against is the fact that people are tired, people have busy lives, and there is so much competition for your time and your attention with just like magnificent shows on Netflix and HBO and running around after kids. There's so much stuff going on that it's very easy to just kind of numb out, do your day, get to the end of it, and not have done anything for your own well-being.
And say, well, I'll start tomorrow.
I'll start tomorrow, right? So one of the things about I'll start tomorrow, Wyatt Woodsmall is a psychologist who calls himself a modeler, but he has the ability to define things very precisely. He says that to start a new habit, there's only two things you have to do. It's start now, right, and keep doing it. So the energy component of really is about making a commitment to start to do certain things on a regular basis. So moving more, whatever kind of moving you're doing, but move more than you normally do is a good way to increase energy. Eat better. Watch what you're putting into your mind. So just like there's junk food in for your body, there's lots of junk food for your mind that you can listen to. One of the first steps that I took as I was pulling out of burnout was to completely cut myself out of news media and even sports media because there's just so much negativity that doesn't help me at all. I love sports and I love excellence, and I enjoyed my morning drive into work listening to sports radio. But even that had so much drama and negativity associated with it. They were talking less about excellence and more about,
negative
events happening. So I turned all that off, and I instead replaced it with things that were much more inspirational and helped me to aspire to more for myself, to keep growing and changing, right? That process. We're never finished products. I'm not a finished product. And the way that I find to increase my energy is to, if I don't have virtual people that I'm hanging out with, or rather actual people that I'm hanging out with, the virtual folks that I hang out with on podcasts and interviews and audiobooks and all of these things, they energize me, right?
Well, you made me take the first step today. I'm going to move a little more because I'm taking a cold shower, and I'm going to run from the shower to my bedroom to get dressed and get warm. So right here, I'm taking the first step.
Yeah.
So you really have positioned yourself in a path to become more aware yourself of the positive thinking and what it does for a person rather than all the negative things in your path here.
Yeah, 100%. So over the last 12 years, you know, lots of venturing into different territories and different mindsets for myself. So happiness became something that I became very, very interested in. So in not that long ago, we didn't think that there was much that we could do to affect people's levels of happiness. It was thought to be sort of a set point that you had that was based on your genetics and your upbringing, but that was kind of a defined thing that was, you couldn't really budge. And in more recent years, that has been shown to be incorrect. So there's a definition of happiness that I use from Sean Aker, who's a researcher in Harvard. And he says that happiness is the feeling of joy that you get as you strive to fulfill your potential. So happiness doesn't mean that you're happy every minute. Happiness is really about growing and making progress towards your goals. And during that time, just like with the Man in the Arena speech, there's times you're going to fail. There's times that you're going to have all sorts of emotions that are not just happy emotions. But if you want to upgrade your sense of happiness, you know, set goals and make yourself grow towards them. Get out of your comfort zone and do more stuff. Another thing that became an interest of mine was leadership. And I spent a period of the last 12 years learning leadership and trying to teach leadership and facilitating groups on leadership. The definition of leadership that I've used has changed over time. So there's a writer, John Maxwell, who's a big leadership expert. And he says that leadership is influence, nothing more, nothing less. And there's another leadership group that says that, you know, leadership is about inspiring others and affecting change. And over time, and this kind of evolved actually in Morning Musings, you know, for me, what leadership became was all about helping more people to help more people. So that's very inspiring to me, and it's part of what keeps me moving forward with things like getting your next act out into the world. Mm-hmm. Success was also a big thing for me. How do you find success? The progressive realization of worthwhile goals. And one piece that, you know, I wish that I'd had when I was younger was that those worthwhile goals are goals that I get to figure out more intentionally. Back when I went to med school, I really didn't give it much thought. Like right before I went to med school, I had a conversation with my father. I said, what if I don't really want to be a doctor? You know, I'm not sure that I've thought about this very much. I'm making a big commitment here. He says, well, why don't you just become a doctor? And if you don't like it, go do something else. You can always be a doctor.
You'll always have that MD
you'll always
after
have
your
that,
name.
Right? Yeah, you can always go do something else.
that's neat.
So you know, kind of being more intentional with how we define success is an important component to things. And then the idea of what's called the adjacent possible, which I learned from Cal Newport in a great book called So Good They Can't Ignore You. But the adjacent possible means that you can, you know, from wherever you are, if you have little areas of interest that don't require much resources, so not a big investment of time or money or energy, that you can try different things out. So, for instance, when I was first trying to make a difference and make an impact, I thought that I would teach people about this condition called bipolar type 2, which was poorly understood. So I started to do some YouTube videos that you can still find on YouTube, you know, Manuel Lastrock, MD, bipolar 2. And I gave conferences in the area that were pretty easy. I just sent out flyers to therapists and doctors. The YouTube videos had me learn a new skill set. I put on the conferences to teach people and filled up, you know, a room at the Holiday Inn a couple of times over the course of some months and taught. And I discovered two things. One was I didn't want to teach about illness, but I also discovered I enjoy teaching. The idea of being in front of people and just talking, I never would have guessed that that was something that was enjoyable to me. But just exploring that adjacent possible taught me some things that I was able to take forward.
So you're taking you're taking chances about yourself. I mean, it wasn't too long ago. I mean, and this is, you know, not as deep as you know, we get from you. It wasn't too long in the course of human history that we thought the world was flat.
Right.
So when Giuseppe set out to find out what was going on when everybody told him he was going to fall off the earth, instead he was in an island in the South Pacific living a life of greatness. But if he didn't take a chance,
right.
he would have been at home thinking, I can't sail because I'm going to fall off the end of the world. So you have to have faith in yourself, too, to take a chance on yourself, right?
Yeah, so the faith in yourself or the faith in the process, right? The faith that you know, there is no failure, it's really learning. A desire to move out of your comfort zone. That's so much of what we experience today. And you talk about the evolution of humans. It wasn't that long ago that we had to hunt and gather like all day long just to stay alive. The idea that we live in a society where more people are dying from overeating than from undereating is something that was inconceivable until very, very recently. So what happens to us when survival is assured and we no longer have to struggle is that, you know, our brain shut down, our body shut down, and it's really hard to push ourselves to extend ourselves from you know, our everyday lives where we can just numb out. And for people who are getting tired of that, for people who want more out of life, want more real happiness, that's where programs where you learn, you grow, and you push yourself are helpful. The other thing about, and we were talking about the energy component and, you know, moving, eating, sleeping, meditating, these sorts of things are what you can start to implement from wherever you are, and they give you the best chance of down the road, 10 years, 20 years, 30 years down the road, being able to continue to move and think and, you know, be a fully functional, fully engaged person at whatever age you are.
Mm-hmm. I, you know, the thing about hunting and for your life, you know, you had to stay alive and becoming more functional in our daily lives. I always laugh when we lose our power for a day. I'm going to call National Grid. Oh, wait, my phone doesn't work. All right, I'm going to get on the computer and see what's going on. Oh, my computer doesn't work. What am I going to do today? Right. And you realize that years ago, people didn't have these comforts, mm-hmm. and they lived and prospered. So there are things that can bring you to reality, and a program like yours, it teaches you on every facet of your life how to make yourself better and people around you. And I think that's great.
Yeah, so we've had four cohorts go through Your Next Act, and people have found that the way that we've laid it out for them, that there's a community of folks who are all committed to changing. They set a goal that they're going to hit in 90 days. We meet every 2 weeks to help with a learning and growing matrix to figure out, you know, what's working for you, what's not, what do you need to change, what do you need to keep doing, what do you need to stop doing. But people have an opportunity to really reflect on what's working for them and what changes they need to make to get to where they're going. And if we don't make time for that, you know, someone's going to take your time. Right. Someone, something. There's just too many opportunities to not work on yourself.
And you'll say, well, I'll do it another time.
I'll do it another day, right? Yeah.
And that's the first step that you have to change your mindset with.
That's right. That's right. So the first step really is that commitment step. You know, I'm tired of things being the way that they are, and I want a bigger future for myself. So you make a commitment to that. And then if you continue to take action on those commitments, though, and moving in the direction that you've said, if you keep doing that, it's inevitable that your life's going to change.
Mm-hmm. And then you'd be more apt to engage in other areas to better your life and become more comfortable in your skin, to take more chances to better yourself and be better around other people. I mean, be a more positive influence, probably.
100%. So the goal as you make progress is not only are you happier, but part of that is that leadership, you know, you're having an impact by the actions that you're taking. You're a source of inspiration for others. Mm-hmm. And it's a cycle that kind of builds on itself.
And that's where the engine comes in, correct?
Exactly. Exactly.
I mean, the engine, and you have a diagram of how the engine works. You were showing me how the engine works and how it relates to every step.
And right. So the engine, as I call it, was inspired by Jim Collins in his book Good to Great. He had what he called a flywheel. So a flywheel is a set of processes that you put in place that if you take care of the first process, it makes it almost inevitable that you can move into the second one, and then into the third, and then into the fourth, and you form a virtuous cycle. So the analogy would be the downward cycle is, you know, I feel depressed, so I stay home, and then I isolate, and I'm, you know, away from people, and I get more depressed, so I isolate and stay home and stay away from people, and I get more depressed. So that's kind of the downward cycle. An upward cycle, a virtuous cycle, would be things like, you know, I work on my energy, and as I get more energy, I can work on enthusiasm that flows very naturally, and I can be more enthusiastic and put myself into situations that are harder for me to usually endure. So living right at the edge of my comfort zone, I can engage more, which is the third part. And if you're engaging more, it's almost assured that you're going to have more of an impact. That's the leadership piece, where you're helping more people to help more people. And if you're doing that, then you're going to have more energy, more enthusiasm, more engagement, more impact. So that cycle builds on itself. Mm-hmm. And The two parts that are natural byproducts, good natural byproducts, is that you get more success when you do that, and you're also getting more happiness, the feeling of joy as you strive to fulfill your potential. You're making progress towards your goals.
Now, are you going to write a book? Do you think you'll write a book at some point?
That's so funny. I have a couple of ideas for books, and more will be revealed on that. There's a high likelihood that there will be a book coming. Yeah.
Well, I would like to ask you if you'd be a semi-regular guest so that we can see how you're doing and more information that you can give us about becoming a better person. And I hope you would accept that. And we could work on a book, because I've got a title. I've got a working title. After a cold shower, your first step to a better fulfilled life.
That's great.
Why don't you give us some information, if you could? I'd like your website to put that down, and we can use that.
No, sure. And first, before I give you that, I just want to thank you for the opportunity, and it would be my pleasure to be a regular guest here. My next act is to get your next act out into the world right now to help more people. And I would be happy to continue to share on the things that I'm learning and share with that. So my website is Manuel, Manuel, *ASTRUC.com. Mm-hmm. And there's a form on there that you can sign up for to get a little course on what may very well turn into a book at some point.
Excellent.
And then on Facebook, you can find me at Manuel Astruc Coaching.
Okay, that's
great. And that's
where
my daily morning musings are available.
And I do have to say, I know they're short, but you can get a lot from those short musings that you do. And I think they're great to start a day out. I even told this one person, I said, if you can't see it in the morning, watch it at night and use that as your starting point for the next day. And then, if you can't start it out in the morning. And they're great. They really are. I have to say, you started a great foundation.
I appreciate it so much.
Yeah.
Thank you.
How about the phone number?
The office phone number is 583-7410, 518-583-7410. I'm currently not taking new patients, but if anyone's interested in your next act, the program, that's a good place to catch me.
To start, that's a starting point. You do have a great website. I honestly have to say that. I mean, you can get so much information on that of what you can look for to get involved in the program. And I know next time we'll talk about the business people, the business aspect that you help also in this. And it can mean a difference of, I feel it can make a difference of becoming successful or staying out of the running.
Well, suffering,
static.
Right? So want to alleviate suffering, want to alleviate the burnout, numb out, and really have people, work on their mental fitness so that they can enjoy their journey.
Yep. Well, listen, it was great having you. I'm glad
Thanks
you agreed
so
to come back. And we'll be back next Saturday.